Remember a couple of years ago, I had gotten back from Eretz Yisrael on a Friday morning, and I was too late to catch Minyan in my shul, so I went to the Young Israel Woodmere to the 8:30 Minyan, and I was totally exhausted. Like, it was, you know, after a long flight back from Eretz Yisrael, didn't sleep at all on the flight, and I just wanted to, like, get home, take a shower, get, like, you know, get settled. And a parent of a Talmud of mine saw me in shul, this is what happens when you're a Rebbe, and he for about 15, 20 minutes, he told me a Dvar Torah, that, you know, this is like one of those nisyonos where you have to, you know. But then, like, when I got over myself and the fact that I was so tired and that I wanted, he had no way of knowing, so I actually listened to what he said and was pretty good. So I want to share with you some of the ideas that he had. I'm going to take it in a little bit of a different direction than he took it in, but some of the ideas that he had in that interesting encounter. Take a different approach, but he had some very fascinating ideas. You know, Yosef is identified as a Ben Zukunim of Yaakov. Rashiv already pointed out on Monday, for those who go to the Sicha, that it's unusual that it's called Ben Zukunim. There's a big kasha on Ben Zukunim. What's the big kasha on Ben Zukunim? Binyamin. Binyamin is the big kasha on Ben Zukunim, because Yosef is not the Ben Zukunim. Binyamin is the Ben Zukunim, but Yosef is identified as the Ben Zukunim. So the kasha is, why is Yosef called a Ben Zukunim? So Rashiva quoted Ralbag, okay, which is a very nice idea, which we're not going to get into right now. But, you know, that's question number one. Why is Yosef called the Ben Zukunim when it's so obvious? It's so obvious that he's not the Ben Zukunim, that it's Binyamin who's the Ben Zukunim. Second of all, Rashi tells us that this remarkable sequence of events that happened with Leah and Dina and Rachel, and how many Shvatim each of them is going to have, and that Leah, when she was pregnant with Dina, prayed that the baby should be a girl, because if the baby were to be a boy, she would have 7 of the 12 Shvatim, and when you do the math, if there are supposed to be 12, that's going to leave Rachel with only 1, fewer than any of the Shvachos, and what a terribly bizayon that would be to Rachel, right? We're familiar with this Rashi. In fact, the Das HaKadosh Bali HaTosos, or one of the Mefarshim, says that it's actually that Dina was a that Leah was actually carrying a boy, and Rachel was carrying a girl at the time, and there was a fetal swap that happened somehow, that was the miracle that God did. Whatever the miracle was, either Dina turned from a boy into a girl, or there was a fetal swap. All of that because Leah prayed that Rachel should be spared that embarrassment. So this, my Talmud's father said, is just a very pashtut question. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what was plan A? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to embarrass Rachel? Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had set it up that Rachel was going to be embarrassed, that Rachel was going to have less than the Shvachos. So she was going to have 1 of the 12, and each of the Shvachos is going to have 2 of the 12 Shvatim. And it took this prayer of Leah, which the Gemara in Maseches Brachos calls a tefillah al anes, which normal people, the Gemara says, are not even allowed to issue such a prayer, but because she was such a tzaddik, she was permitted to make such a prayer, and it took that to create this act of God so that Rachel would not be humiliated. Where was Hashem for Rachel? Why did it have to take Leah's heroic act in order to save Rachel that humiliation? And a third question. One thing that always bothered me about the birth and the subsequent naming of Binyamin, we read about it in last week's parsha, was that what was Rachel's dying wish? She named her child. The child that she died while delivering, she actually got to name him. And what did she call him? Ben Oni. Not Binyamin. She called him Ben Oni. And as soon as she dies, Yaakov's like, okay, she's gone, let's call him Binyamin. Like, I mean, I have a relative that when he was born, there was a machlokes between his father and his mother what to name him. The father, it was in a machlokes about the order of the names. I'm going to use different names not to, identify. So let's say his name was Aryeh Tzvi, which is my name, right? So there was the father wanted to name him Aryeh Tzvi. The mother wanted to name him Tzvi Aryeh. And before the bris, you know, the woman always wins, right? So it's going to be Tzvi Aryeh. Father gets up at the bris and they say, Kari Shmo B'Yisrael. and he says, Aryeh Tzvi, and he turns to the Ezra Sanashim, and he sticks out his tongue at his wife, like, ha. They later got divorced. Because that doesn't happen in a healthy marriage, right? That's not supposed to happen. So, like, what's Yaakov doing? Yaakov is that, you know, Rachel, her dying wish is Ben Oni, and he, like, an audible at the line, and, you know, and all of a sudden it's Binyamin. That's a little bit strange, especially when you consider how much Yaakov adored Rachel and how you would imagine that her dying wish would be something that was extremely important to him. And normally we only ask three questions, but let's ask a fourth question. Also about Binyamin. Chanukah is not mentioned in the Torah explicitly, for obvious reasons, right? It's not mentioned in the Torah explicitly. It didn't happen yet. But there are remezim to Chanukah in the Torah. The most famous remez to Chanukah in the Torah? What? I didn't even know that one. The 25th word is Zohar? Okay. What? Okay, the remez, yeah. Wow, I didn't know any of the... Wow. I thought the most famous remez for Chanukah was Tvach, Tavach V'Hachein. No? No, you don't know? Okay, all right. So, okay, that's what I assumed. Okay, that the last word of Tavach and the words and the letters of V'Hachein, Ches, Vav, Hei, Chaf, Nun, when you jumble them up, spell Chanukah. All right? Okay, that's what I thought. Less emphasized, though, is the... but that's the classic remez. So, but what's the context of that remez of Chanukah? It's Tavach Tavach V'Achein is the command to prepare the meal. It's the end of the pasuk which begins with the words Vayar Yosef Osam Es Binyamin. That Yosef sees Binyamin, and he right away tells the people in his palace, prepare a meal. Right, that's the remez to Chanukah. Parsh Miketz, we read Chanukah. This is, of course, this week's Parsh Vayeshev. But and a few psukim later in next week's Parsha, when Yosef finally talks to Binyamin, he says, Elokim, anyone know? Yechancha b'ni. Also, Lashon of Chanukah. Lashon of Chinuch, or Chanukah. What exactly is the connection between Binyamin in particular and Chanukah? In what way does Binyamin represent Chanukah? Okay, so let's answer four questions. So question number one is the Ben Zakunim should not be Yosef. Binyamin should have rightfully earned the title of Ben Zakunim. Question number two, why is it that our Kodesh Baruch Hu was perfectly happy to leave Rachel with only one shevet and took an act of Leah to change that? Question number three, how could Yaakov change Rachel's dying wish? Her dying wish was to name the kid Ben Oni, and Yaakov just, you know, flips it in the last minute and calls him Binyamin. And what is the connection between Binyamin and Chanukah? It seems that the Ramazim to Chanukah seemed to come up with Binyamin. So what Metalman's father suggested was that the initial plan... It's a suggestion, it's a chiddush, was that the initial plan may have been for Rachel to be the matriarch of two full Shvatim, but not in a direct kind of way. What do I mean by that? Yosef has Menashe and Ephraim. What do we know about Menashe and Ephraim? Kiruvein v'Shimon Yuli. Yaakov specifically identifies them as Kiruvein v'Shimon. In fact, my chavrusa Rabbi Razman likes to say that why is it that we bless our children that they should be Kemenashe and Ephraim? Why not like Reuven and Shimon? Why not like anybody else? Because the greatest prayer that a parent has for his child, the greatest wish that a parent has for his child, is that we have this trend in Jewish history called Yeridas Hadoros, where things tend to go down a little bit from one generation to the next. And our prayer, our hope for our children and for our Talmidim is that they somehow manage to defy the trend of Yeridas Hadoros, to be better than we are, which is an unnatural thing, right? Because naturally there's Yeridas Hadoros. We want our children to defy Yeridas Hadoros. So who are you going to give a bracha? You give a bracha that they should be like the two people who were in the next generation, and yet were ki'ilu, they were Shvatim themselves. Ki'ilu, they were in the previous generation. They successfully defied Yeridas Hadoros. That's what we look for. That's what we pray for in our children. So Rachel was supposed to have two Shvatim, but only one that was supposed to come out of her womb, and that Shevet was going to divide into two, into Ephraim and Menashe. His two children, in Yaakov's own words, are Kruvin v'Shimon. Leah didn't realize this, and wanted to make sure that Rachel had two sons directly from her. So it turns out that Binyamin was a total extra. Right? That's why there are, by some counts, 13 Shvatim, when there were supposed to be, by everyone's cheshbon, it was supposed to be 12. So when Yaakov was supposed to be finished having children, along comes Binyamin. After the chapter was supposed to be closed on Yaakov's fatherhood, Binyamin showed that there's still more to push. And maybe that idea, that nekuda of Binyamin, that idea of Binyamin being the one that represents beyond our limits, beyond what was supposed to be, being able to accomplish even when all is accomplished, when everything is over already, when it's all done, maybe that can help us understand all the questions that we started with. Yosef is called the Ben Zakunim. Why? Because he was destined to be the Ben Zakunim had the plan not been disrupted by Leah's tefillah. Binyamin almost became like a grandchild, treated differently than all the other brothers. He was, right? Everyone else, no problem, go to Mitzrayim, but I'm keeping Binyamin with me. You know, the overprotective parent of that youngest child. Because Binyamin is treated like in my family we have one family member who has a number of children and after their cluster of children they have a number of years later another child. That child is mamish, a grandchild to them. Like it's treated like a grandchild in every which way. And if the child misbehaves, they tell him, you better start behaving or else we're going to start treating you like the rest of your siblings. You know, like it's bepemole. Like you treat them completely differently than everybody else. And that's okay. My family, we do the same thing. I have four sons and then I have a daughter. So, you know, my kid's like, why do you love Chani more than us? Well, because she loves us more than you love us. So there's a child that sometimes, no sense in denying, but there's a child that's treated sometimes like a grandchild, and that became Binyamin. He's treated with kid gloves the whole time. And that's why Yosef, when he talks to Binyamin, how does he refer to him? Elkim Yechancha, Bini? He's not a son. Yeah, but for the older siblings, you know, the little one that came afterwards, he's the one that wasn't supposed to be, the one that was the midlife crisis child, so to speak, you know, like the one that wasn't meant to be, you know, he's Bini, he's like a child to the other siblings. And maybe this explains the silent debate between Yaakov and Rachel about Binyamin's name. See, Rachel sees him as Ben Oni, not because she was inspired to invent Jewish mother guilt and saddle him with the knowledge that I died for you. You know, that's not what she was doing. She was expressing how Binyamin saved her from the suffering that she would have had to endure had she not had one of the Shvatim, had she only had one instead of two. That's what she thought Binyamin was, that Binyamin was the one that was the second of the Shvatim that she had, and otherwise she would have been humiliated because she would have only had one and not two. He was the son of the affliction that would have been experienced if Leah hadn't prayed to change Dina. Yaakov, however, recognizes that Binyamin wasn't needed for that. He wasn't needed to alleviate that suffering. Rachel would have had two Shvatim regardless. She would have had two Shvatim. Binyamin, in fact, represents the idea that when we think we've reached our limit, when we think we've accomplished all that there is to accomplish, we can do more. We can still go further. The Shvatim are all born outside of Eretz Canaan. Binyamin is born in Eretz Canaan. He's different. He's an addition beyond what the original plan was. And that's the Musar Haskel of Binyamin. That's what Binyamin represents. That you think you're done, you think you've accomplished everything that there is to accomplish, you're able to do more, you have to push further. I've told you the story in the past about the fellow who built the mikveh, the first mikveh in the South Shore of Long Island, I think in Woodmere, it was the first mikveh in the South Shore of Long Island. And he went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe was very excited about building mikvahs. He was one of the things that he was very into. So he went to get a bracha from Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he felt like he was going to come, and, you know, like, here, look what I accomplished. You know, at that time, South Shore of Long Island was not what it is today. It wasn't from life was not such a powerful force at that time, whatever it was, 60 years ago or 50 years ago, whenever it was. And he goes to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and he says, I built a mikveh on the south shore of Long Island. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, good, now build 10 more. You know, because that's how the Lubavitcher Rebbe saw things. You think you're done now? Wait, now you're going to play golf? Now you're going to retire? No, you can do more. So go do more. When you think you're done, do more. That's what Binyamin represents. You know, the Medrash tells us Moshe Rabbeinu had, the Chumash says that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with Karnei HaHod. With Kikaran Arpanav, the Chumash says, his face shone. So the Medrash says, Mehecha Natal Moshe Karnei Ahod, where did he get that shine from? So the Medrash says, oh, you know where he got that shine? After he finished writing the Torah, there was some ink that was left over. He rubbed it on his face, and his face started to shine. What does that mean? Obviously, it's metaphorical, because ink doesn't make your face shine. It just makes, you know, makes you look like a racist. I mean, to put it on your face, it doesn't make your face shine. So what does that mean? Mehicha natal Moshe Karnei Ahod, that he took the extra. Yeah. Am I going to be allowed to post this online? We said too many things. So where did he get the Karnei Ahod from? Because so I always thought the pshat in the Medrash was Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah. He wrote God's autobiography. He wrote the most important book in the history of humankind. You would think, after doing that, he's done, right? What more can you do? There's nothing else that has to be done. But you know where a real shine of a person comes from? You know where a person's ability to excel comes from? After you've accomplished your greatest accomplishment, to find something else to do, to find something more, to realize that there's still ink left in your quill. That even after writing that book, there's still more that you're able to do. We just had last Shabbos, for Shabbos lunch, Rebbetzin Lam, who's the wife of Rabbi Maurice Lam, Zichrono Levracha. Rabbi Maurice Lam wrote a book called The Jewish Way in Death and Mourning, sold over 1 million copies. A Jewish book of halacha that sold over 1 million copies. I print 1,000 Hakona Olamos, and I got boxes and boxes in my basement, right? Sold over 1 million copies. And then he wrote another book, The Jewish Way in Love and Marriage. So you would think, after, you know, the success of The Jewish Way, like, he doesn't need another book. The Jewish Way in Love and Marriage sold 250,000 copies. And it was been translated into 6 languages. And, you know, they said, his wife told us that he wrote that book because the people are often called by the name of their Sefer, you know, the Chafetz Chaim. So he didn't want to be death and mourning. He'd rather be something a little more cheerful. So, but the bottom line is, the Yesod is, that's what Binyamin represents, after you've done everything, to do a little more, to push yourself a little further. And that might be the connection between Binyamin and Chanukah. The story of Chanukah is the story of what seemed like it was going to be the end of an era. We lost the ideological battle. The glory of the Beis HaMikdash was going to end. It's the koach of Binyamin that says that we could still accomplish more. There are still many more years of Kedushas HaMikdash that we can enjoy. We can gain an extension on that Kedusha. When the Gemara asks, "My Chanukah," right? So what does Gemara say? The story of the one bottle of oil lasting for 8 nights. You know, I've mentioned this to you in the past, I think. That's the story of my... I experienced a similar miracle. You're not supposed to talk about this publicly, right? Those of us who, you know, have nisim v'flos happen to us. But, like, you know, I'm gonna breach tznius a little here, and I'm going to tell you that I had a very similar miracle once. My old car, the Toyota Corolla, the blue Toyota Corolla, it died once. And I brought it to the mechanic, and he said, yeah, your battery died. And he looked, and he said, whoa, this is the original battery of the car. This should have died 2 years ago. That battery was only had enough juice for whatever, for 5 years, and it lasted for 7. That's exactly the Chanukah miracle. And it happened to me. I'll give brachas later for a small fee. but it happened to me. Meaning, I mean, come on, is that the greatest miracle? Is that the most important miracle? What's the miracle of Chanukah? That some Shemin, would you even know how long Shemin is supposed to last? You ever light your Hanukkah menorah and then you come back like 4 hours later, you're like, whoa, that thing is still lit? That's amazing. You know, okay, I guess there was enough oil. You don't say, wow, that's a miracle. So is this like on par with Kriyas Yamsuf? Is it on par with any of the Eser Makos? We've had much bigger miracles. But maybe the miracle of the oil is not about how great a miracle it was, but what it symbolizes. It symbolizes what Hanukkah is meant to be, extending beyond natural boundaries. The oil is supposed to only last a small amount of time, just as we're only meant to last in Eretz Yisrael with the base of Mikdash for a short amount of time. But then we found that extra reserve. We found our inner Binyamin. We found the ability to extend, to push forward. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, Amud Zayin Amud Aleph, tells us that when we arrived at the Yamsuf, so the Mitzrim bearing down on us from behind, and right in front of us is Yamsuf, so dead end, right? What are you going to do? So the Gemara says it was Shevet Binyamin that wanted to jump in first. Why? Because when you hit a dead end, and you say, okay, this is the end, this is the barrier, this is where it ends, what does Shevet Binyamin do? Shevet Binyamin says, no, there's no such thing as an end. We can push beyond the end. The Sifri on the Pasuk that describes Binyamin Ze'ev Yitrof. What does Binyamin Ze'ev Yitrof mean? So there is a famous comment of Rabbeinu Ephraim al Torah, where he says it means Binyamin was Kayadua. There's a certain type of person that when the moon is full turns into a wolf-like creature. He describes werewolves. He says Binyamin must have been a werewolf, and that's why Yaakov didn't want him going alone to Mitzrayim, because what would have happened if he would have turned into a werewolf? Well, it's a strange, strange comment of Rabbeinu Ephraim. So leaving that aside, what's the more pashut pshat? So the Sifri says he's toreif milafanav milaacharav, that he chaps both from before and from after, from behind and from in front. And the Imamus explains that it's a reference to Tosefa Shabbos, that we're mosif mechal al kodesh both before Shabbos starts and after Shabbos ends. So we have clear lines when Shabbos starts, when Shabbos ends. And what does Binyamin represent? Tosefa Shabbos. That we go beyond those lines, a little before, a little after. That we don't accept boundaries. We can push beyond boundaries. In fact, as Sfasemis writes, Goyim u'kahal Goyim is a reference to Binyamin being able to bring Mila to Gerim. See, before Binyamin, Mila was something limited to Bnei Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yakov. It was only with Binyamin that we introduced the notion that a Goy can get a Mila and enter into Klal Yisrael. The extension of Kedushas Yisrael doesn't even have to be limited to native Jews. It can even go beyond. It can go to Gerim as well. That's the koach of Binyamin. So what do we celebrate on Chanukah? A lot of things. There are a lot of messages. But maybe one of the important messages of Chanukah is the message of Binyamin. That we have much more capacity than we think we do. And that when we accomplish things, when we're doing things right, we should be cognizant of the fact that we can still do more, that we can push further, that instead of, okay, now I'll take a break, you know, I learned enough for today. No, I could learn more. I could learn, to borrow from a different yeshiva, deep into the night. Right? I can go further. I can accomplish more. And that's what Klal Yisrael is. Klal Yisrael has the ability to survive, not just to survive, to thrive in Galus, to bring Or into Choshech, that when the night gets dark and everyone else is turning in for the night, and it's winter time and it's cold and it's dreary and you're just sort of calling it a night early, what do? We light the candles. And we keep the light going. We break through that barrier. And that's the notion. The Gemara says in Maseches Menachos that Talmidei Chachamim that are Lomei Torah Balelos, Dafka Balelos, are the ones that bring about the that it's Ki'ilu they're doing the Avodas Hamigdash, because we're breaking those barriers. We're showing that we're able to accomplish even well after dark. That we understand the message of Binyamin. We understand what it means to go beyond what we're supposed to be, our original limitations.